Welcome to the Hyperion Hub, your meeting place for all things Disney. Now your hosts.
Hello and welcome back to the Hyperion Hub. I'm John Alois and I'm joined by Sean Degenhart.
Should old acquaintance be forgot?
And John Redling Schaefer.
Where'd you guys go? Are we back?
We are back.
I'm lost. Are we there yet?
It's good to be back. I thought for sure Sean would have sung Welcome Back, Cotter, but I had money on this one.
Welcome back.
Well, you can't tell him to do it.
At least not while we're recording.
We're glad you're joining us once again. You can join us on social media, follow us, contact us there, or send us an email at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. If you have a trip review or a restaurant review or a movie review or just want to share your thoughts on the show, send us a voice recorded message. Once again, at podcast@thehyperionhub.
How about an Amazon product review? Can we do product reviews?
If it's Disney related,
I guess. Oh, okay. Yeah. Big caveat there. Because people go to Olive Garden. Are we going to have to talk about that?
A little whisk for making eggs.
That's we could review all it. That is perfect.
And this is for where another everybody show. Hits pause and deletes the episode.
Wherever you are listening to us, please subscribe. It's free. You never miss an episode that way. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please write and review. It helps more people find the show.
It's free.
It's time for our Disney views.
Some podcasts like to have Disney news. We share our Disney views, and I want to talk about a couple of shows I recently enjoyed on Disney Plus. The first, Marvel Studios Echo. It's the story of a superhero who happens to be Native American. That plays a part in the series. It stars Alakwa Cox in the lead role as Maya Lopez. Vincent D'Onofrio reprises his role as the Kingpin. And it's a street-level show, meaning there's no flying around or space travel or anything like that. Five-part series. It's rated M for mature. It's gritty. It's dark. It's violent. Maya was kind of raised by Kingpin, so there are moments where she's not very heroic, even though she's the hero, essentially. It has depth. I truly enjoyed it.
I have not seen it. When in the timeline does it take place?
Okay. Right before She-Hulk on the timeline. I watch everything in release order. So
yeah, obviously.
But interesting you bring up the timeline. Something I just learned.
You told me to ask that.
I didn't tell you.
Yeah, it's on page 7 of the script. Turn the page, Sean.
I discovered Marvel Studios has incorporated the old Netflix shows into the MCU timeline officially now. This is a fairly recent decision. It's not part of the multiverse. It's actually part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe now.
Is that some act of Congress? Who says that? Who says that? In all honesty, who says it is?
Disney.
And so there's just some edict?
Yeah, so now the nerds have something less to fight about. Daredevil, Luke Cage,
Careful.
Iron Fist.
You might want to edit that
I'm
out.
One of the nerds. It's fine. Iron Fist, Jessica Jones, they all make up the Defenders, and they're a part of the timeline. Punisher is as well. And I guess since now Echo is technically Marvel Studios' first mature-rated show, they felt safe adding those others onto the actual timeline.
Interesting.
Mature. So you said violence. Language?
There's some language.
Okay.
It's more for violence on this show. Some of the other shows, it pushes the boundaries a little bit more.
In terms of physical and language. Okay.
Yeah. Another show. Not new, but new to me and to Disney Plus. Are either of you Doctor Who fans?
I like The Who.
No, not that Who.
I have not gotten into
Doctor Who.
I didn't either. I didn't watch the show growing up, probably because of the production value. I mean, it was just not.
Listen to this snob.
Well, I'm sorry. It was a British science fiction TV show. It started in 1963. I had seen a couple of episodes, and it was never really my thing. There are 4 specials on Disney Plus, and I thought they were excellent. I want more. It's been a while since a show has hooked me like this, and they're all about an hour long. You might need to watch a little bit of a recap on YouTube to see what the premise of the show is. The special number 3 in particular with Neil Patrick Harris was brilliant on many layered levels. So
you don't need to have seen previous episodes?
I don't think so.
Just to get the gist of the...
You just have to understand. I think there have been something like 12 doctors now or something like that. And it's the same person. He just manifests into another body, right? Or she, or...
Quantum leap.
Yeah. So... Yeah. That's really all you need to know. And then he travels around in this phone booth.
Neil Patrick Harris is a doctor, and he's 16.
The TARDIS.
No, okay.
The TARDIS. You know this
I know
show.
Of it. I don't. Okay. I have not seen it.
You are lying. So no,
I have never seen it.
Well, this may be our first and only episode in 2024.
If you're a sci-fi fan or if you've never seen it, I enjoyed it. Very entertaining. On to our guest, and we are excited to kick off 2024 with this gentleman. He's the narrator for one of the scariest and most exciting Disney attractions ever created. He voices Rod Serling in the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror at Disney's Hollywood Studios. He's worked with other companies as well besides Disney, including Warner Brothers, Nickelodeon, and Studio Ghibli. Prolific voice artist Mark Silverman joins us. Thank you, Mark.
It's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow. Yeah. Well, thanks, fellas. I'm glad to be here, and this is fun.
That's fun for us, too. Thank you. Before we get started on the Tower of Terror, we want to hear your story and go back. You grew up in Southern California. Your dad was a movie producer, correct?
Yes.
What was that like?
My dad was a movie producer. And he made movies with a lot of actors before they were famous, like Jan Michael Vincent and Sam Elliott. And then the next movie he made with the biggest star in the world at that time, Robert Redford, which was a prison movie called Brubaker. And then I grew up sort of, you know, on movie sets and things. And I had a real knack for doing voices. And I was obsessed with Disneyland. And I would go into Disneyland when I was a kid with my tape recorder. I was so obsessed, I would record the rides. This is in the 70s. Now, that doesn't sound that odd, but back then, you would not believe how many people would say, "So you're just going to record Pirates of the Caribbean and listen to it in your room?" And I would go, "Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I'm doing." And I recorded all the rides. And I was obsessed. And this is when I was like 14, 15. And I would call Wed Enterprises at the time it was called. And I would say, "Just put me on with anybody that I want to talk about Pirates of the Caribbean." And they would put me on with Imagineers. And when I look back at it now, I'm thinking, God, I must have been really annoying to them. But they were so nice. I think they were painting Figment models and things. Because it was like they were preparing for Epcot. In the late 70s. And I'd call them and I'd ask a million questions, and they began to know me, as they would call me, "Mr. Pirates of the Caribbean, what can I do for you today?" I'd say, "How tall is the auctioneer? How deep's the water?" And because back then there's no internet, so you had to do things like that. So I got into voices and I became a voice actor, and I started getting jobs revoicing celebrities. So I had a real knack for mimicry and the timing of that. And then in 1993, a friend of mine called me and said, "Hey, my agent just sent me an audition to do Rod Serling for some Disney ride." Now, I couldn't figure out how did they connect Twilight Zone with Disney. I didn't really understand. I knew that the Disney MGM studios had movie-oriented attractions and things. But I thought this was interesting, so I went down and auditioned for some woman in Beverly Hills, and I didn't think much of it, because these jobs, voiceover jobs, are so hard to get, and it's so competitive in LA. And then like 2 weeks later, I came home from somewhere, and my message machine was blinking. And this woman goes, "Hi, Mark. They loved your Rod Serling at Disney, and they want to see you for another audition at Imagineering." At this point, I'm thinking, my God, I get to go into the building at Imagineering. I mean, I wanted to get in there for years. I wasn't even thinking about the audition. I just knew that I was going to be in this building. So that was incredibly exciting for me. And I started watching so much Twilight Zone, and I really practiced, and I went in for that audition. And then a few days after that, the casting woman at Imagineering, she would call me and say, you know, they really like you. You're in the top 15 now. It was sort of like American Idol, the way I think about it now. Then there'd be another audition, and then they'd call back and say, now you're in the top 9. Now you're in the top 6, you know. Then there was one last audition where I went, and Joe Dante was there, the director. And the other guy that came in that was there also auditioning against me did it. And then I did it. And then they told me that day, they said they went with you. And then that was an incredible day because I always wanted to do something for Disney. And then all of a sudden I was the voice of a new ride. And it was crazy because I had obsessed about rides and voices for years, you know, and that just sort of happened.
What was the timeline from first audition to the final callback?
It was somewhere around, I think, around May of 1993. And then about, I would say, 2 months later,
okay,
that's when they told me I got it. And then I went in to record, and that was great. It only took about 2 hours, I think. And then what was interesting was a few months after I recorded the whole ride narration, there was this press event at Disney Studios where they had some sort of a mock-up and more dialogue I had to go in to record. And when I recorded this new dialogue, they called me back from Imagineering and they said, we think you're even better at it now than you were when you first did it. They said, you want to come back next week and do it all over again? I said, sure. And then by the next week, I got this terrible cold and I could barely talk. And I remember calling the casting woman and say, I sound terrible. It's going to sound like, hey, you unlock this door. You're on the tower. You know, they're new. And she said, come on in. We got the room already. And I went into audition and I said one line, you were the passengers. And they said, you better go home. And that was that. And then about 4 months later, I went in and did it again. And that's the ride audio here.
I've read that you're a big Twilight Zone fan. Right. So you watched a lot of Rod Serling growing up. It's not an easy process, though. I mean, you have to not only nail down the tone, you have to nail down dialect and cadence, and it's very layered. So how huge was this challenge to do this?
Well, I had watched, as you said, I watched so much Twilight Zone. And I had a book at the time that had all the monologues. So Twilight Zone would come on like at midnight. And then I'd look up the episode in the book and I would read it with Rod. And I had a very natural ability to do it. And when I started practicing, it really just started working. And yes, you can't just do the voice. You have to. I remember Phil Hartman on a talk show and somebody called up and said, how do you do a great impression? And he said something so accurate. He goes, you have to momentarily be possessed. I thought, yeah, that's about the best way to describe it. You have to feel like you're that person, really. And once I started doing that, I knew I was on the right track.
So was Rod your first effort in impersonations? You said a couple of times already that you've had a gift or a knack for it. Who did you first mimic?
My first impression was Maxwell Smart on Adams.
Yeah.
And would you believe I'm Maxwell Smart, 1886 of Control. Did you hear that, Siegfried? I happen to have a very distinctive and unique voice.
What?
I think somewhere in the 70s, almost the entire year, about 80% of the things I said was in the voice of Maxwell Smart. Maxwell Smart. And once I get started, it's hard for me to stop, you know.
Well, for our listeners, he's actually talking into a shoe phone right now. It's pretty impressive.
I had a shoe phone.
Of course.
I was so obsessed with that show. It was on in the 70s. Like, it got to a point where it was on 8 times a day. And I would base my entire day around watching Get Smart. Yeah. So Before Tower of Terror, they brought me into Universal Studios, and I had to revoice 80 lines for Al Pacino because they were putting his movie on television. And there was a lot of work like this back then. They don't do it so much anymore, but they would show like R-rated movies on regular network TV. But you obviously can't cuss on network. So I had to say the lines like Al and then take out his bad words and put in more family-friendly words.
What was the movie?
Carlito's Way.
That's a lot
and,
to film.
And they go to the star first. They go to Al Pacino first. But he wasn't available, so they go to somebody that could do it, and then I got that job, and it was great. They put you in a room, and they show you the movie, and they give you the beeps, beep, 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 and on the fourth imaginary beep, you start talking, and they sync it exactly with Pacino opening his mouth, you know. So that was great. I had a lot of practice in that. So when they brought the monitor in the Tower of Terror. Opening, I was able to dub Rod Serling, and that when you see him.
So I want to go back to Carlito's Way really quick. I'm sorry. I'm trying to remember the year for that movie because not too many actors. I'm thinking about Al Pacino. I apologize if I'm going off on a tangent here, but Al Pacino has different eras of his career. He sounds very different in The Godfather than he does.
I could do that too.
Okay.
Yeah, I've done that too. In Serpico. In Serpico, he goes into the shoe store where his family owns a shoe store. And his brother is going like, "Where were you last night for dinner?" And Pacino goes, "Oh, now that's it. Now look, I don't like that. Don't invite people over if you don't know, if you're not sure I can be there. Now I mean it now. Now if I want to talk to Marianne, I'll call her."
And which that's so different. Like, yes.
Yeah, he ended up sounding so different. So by the time he was doing Carlito's Way, it was, "Dave, you a lawyer man. What the heck is happening to you?" And it's smoking and drinking is what did that.
Okay.
He was talking like this and all this kind of thing. Yeah, so it that was a very difficult job. I was there from like 8 in the morning to about 8 at night. And it was 2 days of recording because he cusses like 10 times every scene. So it was so exhausting.
So vocally, so I'm a singer and, you know, studied voice in college and all that. How much wear and tear is there on your voice and how much, you know, I need a break here to recoup? And
for something like that, it did have a lot of wear and tear because that voice was so big, you know. But for Rod Serling, that doesn't do it. If it has to be like a certain kind of a voice, mm-hmm. Like sometimes on a video game, those are the worst because you have to have a sound in like a war part, like a war game, you know, and you have to have a sound for every possible way somebody could get injured in a war. These death cries, a spear going through you, you throwing a spear, getting shot, all these things. Jeez. And then your voice is raw, and then you look on the script and there's like 9 pages more of screaming. I don't do that anymore, and I won't. There's people that are experts at screaming. I just don't like doing that because it hurts and it's not healthy.
I think at some point, everybody has an imitation of Rod Serling. You know, you grow up watching the show. The show is brilliant. And he ties it all together perfectly, beginning and ending. So what made you stand out? What made you different from everyone else?
I'll tell you why. Because a lot of people that do the Rod Serling, they push it too far. I'm Rod Serling with the Twilight Zone. And the key to doing a good impression is to sound like you're not doing an impression. So they liked the very natural way I sounded. Month of November, hot chocolate, and a small cameo of a child's face, imperfect only in its sublimity. And these are the improbable ingredients to a human emotion. An emotion, say, like fear. I knew how to do it and not push it too hard.
You don't want it to be a caricature.
Right.
Yeah, right. You don't want to be a caricature. So they liked that I could do that, which is the key to the whole thing. Wow. Hollywood, 1939.
Amid the glitz and the glitter of a bustling young movie town at the height of its golden age, the Hollywood Tower Hotel was a star in its own right, a beacon for the show business elite. Now, something is about to happen that'll change all that. Like that.
I've never wanted to clap on our show before. Yeah. This is amazing.
I agree with John. That's the end of the first part of our conversation with Mark Silverman. He can be heard inside the Disney parks, and he'll talk about that next week. Plus, we'll hear more of his Hollywood celebrity imitations. You'll find out why I can't get enough of his Rocky imitation. Ayo. It's better than mine. The Disney Fest is coming back to Peoria, Illinois at the Peoria Riverfront Museum. Mark your calendars for March 22nd through the 24th. Friday, March 22nd will be a trivia contest night, and there will be a film fest throughout the weekend. Movies include 101 Dalmatians, Lady and the Tramp, and more. Special guest speakers are author J.B. Kaufman making his return, and for the first appearance to the Disney Fest, producer-filmmaker Ted Thomas. He's the son of legendary Walt Disney animator Frank Thomas. So once again, Peoria Riverfront Museum in Peoria, Illinois, March 22nd through the 24th. Follow us on social media, like, share, subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review so more people find the show. Email us at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. Send us a voice recorded message there and we may play it on the show. Until next week. Have a great one, everyone.
We're glad you could join us. We'd love to hear from you. You can email or send us a recorded audio message at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. Find us on social media. The Hyperion Hub is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company or its subsidiaries. We'll meet you next time at the Hyperion Hub.